Anybody can be beat.
You're listening to Jet Nation Radio, and here are your hosts, Joe Blewett and Brandon Dowling.
And you! Exciting version of Jet Nation Radio ever. We've had Joe Namath, we've had Nick Mangold, we've had Curtis Martin, we've had Darren freaking Walls. But tonight is the night that we sit around as New York Jet fans, we put our feet up on our kitchen tables, we put our hands behind our head, and we smile. And why do we smile, Joe? Because the New York Jets are on the rise, and their stock is skyrocketing towards off the charts. We sat here last week, live on the air. We had a caller call in who was a Giants fan. Jets live on the air, and the news breaks that the New York Jets bring back all-pro, best cornerback in football, in my opinion, Darrelle Revis. What does that follow? Antonio Cromartie, back with the Jets. Buster Skrine, signed with the Jets. You make the trade for Ryan Fitzpatrick. This defense right now, in my opinion, is the best defense in football. You look at the front seven. You look at the corners they've added. They've done a complete 180 from last year. This might be one of the best off seasons in New York Jets history. The GM's off to a hot start. The owner is finally hearing some praises. Right now, if you're a Jets fan, I understand. What are you going to do at quarterback? Ryan Fitzpatrick is not the answer. Geno Smith is not the answer. Marcus Mariota might not be the answer. I don't care right now. You have to look at the team that we were watching on the field last year. When I sat here and I told you, Joe, I said, they have to do a complete overhaul. They have to bring in practically a whole new group of guys. They have to overhaul this team. They have to turn over this roster, and they need to do it this offseason. They have the money. The people are out there. It needs to happen, and that's exactly what they did. Joe, even though you were against the Revis, you know, coming back to the Jets, even you have to like what's going on with the Jets right now.
No, I was, you know, we talked about it. I was more on the fence about it than most people. I understand both sides. It's definitely an exciting time when you get back Revis, you get back Crow, who, you know, we'll talk about later, but is one of the best Jets that we've had in a while. That guy absolutely loves New York. You know, so we had that, we had Buster Skrine coming, who I actually, I follow Connor Hughes, I believe his name is on Twitter. And he broke down some of his film, and he does excellent work doing that. And I looked up some of the work that he did on him. And Buster Skrine in the slot is going to be an absolute monster. You know, four out of the five starting positions in the secondary are filled with new players. Obviously, we think that Calvin Pryor is going to start at strong safety. We got Marcus Gilchrist from the Chargers, who is a very versatile player. So. It's a completely different team. There's obviously a little bit more moves to come. Excuse me?
I said I forgot about him. It's like that's another guy who you bring into the mix. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's definitely very versatile. He can lock down, from what I've seen and what I've seen on film, he can really lock down bigger receivers. He can really lock down some tight ends. He's okay in coverage. I do think he's going to be our free safety. He's going to be the Tyrann Mathieu kind of guy. Who you know is all over the field like he was in, with Todd Bowles' defense, and obviously Pryor can actually move back to his real position of strong safety and hopefully lay some people out, because basically the strong safety a lot of times is like a linebacker in Bowles' defense. So I think everybody benefits. This defensive line is absolutely crazy with the secondary, you know, and I'm not trying to, you know, make fun of the other radio stations out there, but 98.7, you know, you hear guys saying that the 2009 Jets defensive line with Sione Puha, Chris Jenkins, and Sean Ellis is better than the defensive line we had now. So, you know, that's why I don't listen to those guys. That's absolutely crazy. This is the best defense that the Jets have had since then. I believe the only position the Jets really need, there's a little bit of questions at safety if Gilchrist can play free safety roaming the middle of the field, and then there's outside linebacker. But other than that, Brandon, this defense definitely has the potential to be the number one defense in the league. I'm not saying it will be, but it definitely could be.
No, I'll say it. I will say it will be. I mean, this defense.
Oh, I know you will.
I don't care because look at this team and look at this team on defense. It's from top to bottom. Where is the weakness, Joe? Where is the weakness on this defense?
Like I said, the only position you could look at is outside linebacker and maybe a coverage safety. But other than that, you know, we have a top five defensive line, if not, you know, maybe one or two with Buffalo, and obviously Miami has a great defensive line. They just added Sue, so they're a really good defensive line. I think the Jets corners are the best in the NFL, but I don't think their secondary is the best in the NFL. The only secondary I think is better in the NFL is obviously up there in Seattle, the Legion of Boom. So you
well,
know
they
you
lost
top five
their guys up there, so who knows what's going to happen.
You still have, you know, Cam Chancellor, who in my opinion is the best strong safety. You have Earl Thomas, who in my opinion is the best free safety, and Richard Sherman, who's in the top five corners.
Oh,
so I think their secondary is better.
Definitely, that's the best team in the NFL. But tonight we do have Chris Lopresti from WFAN joining us live here on Jet Nation Radio. He's coming to you live right now. Chris, my man, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, guys. How's it going?
Everything is same as always, Chris. You know, no big news in the New York Jets. You know, just talk right now as they just bring back some old faces. Nothing really new.
No, it's been quiet, right? I mean, geez. Mike Maccagnan said he'd be aggressive and active in free agency, and he certainly lived up to his promise. That was quite a whirlwind week we had. It's quieted down a little bit, as you'd expect, because there's a lot of money spent last week. But, yeah, the Jets were certainly active early and often and put in a lot of investment into that secondary, which we know was a real weakness for them last year. So all of a sudden, they go from having one of the worst units on paper to one of the best, and no surprise that's where Todd Bowles wants to start in his first year as the head coach with the Jets, and that being his area of specialty and the fact that he was a defensive back in his playing days. So it makes all the sense in the world. Obviously, you got to hope that these guys can stay healthy and live up to their contract numbers. But in terms of the names and the reputations and the established reputations out of these guys that are coming in, it makes a lot of sense what the Jets try to do.
Absolutely. Now, Chris, we actually haven't spoken to you live on the air since training camp of last year. Since then, I know the season last year was a complete and utter disaster, in terms of their record, in terms of the performance on the field. Do you think the moves that they've made this offseason to this date, not including the NFL draft, because we have no idea what direction they're going to go in with the draft, we don't know if they're going to target a quarterback, we don't know how, you know, if they're going to go after a wide receiver, do you think they have done enough in the free agency so far to become not only a relevant football team? Because I think, you know, signing Darrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie, Buster Screen, and Marcus Gilchrist makes you a relevant football team. But do you think this is a 9-10 win football team on paper as it stands right now?
I can't go that far yet until we have a clearer picture of what their plans are at the quarterback position. There's no doubt they've upgraded their talent level, not just on defense, but just in general. I think, you know, if you take last year, what they did in the offseason offensively, and you add it to what they've done this year, obviously you bring in Brandon Marshall. We talked about what they did on defense. I mean, you can't – there's nobody that can look you in the eye and say they've gotten worse. That goes without saying. But, you know, we forget – 2 years ago, they were an 8-8 team. Yeah, maybe they did some of that with mirrors, and I think the expectations were decent for them going into last year, and it didn't work out for a variety of reasons. Geno Smith's erratic performance throughout the year being one of them, and the negative performance of the secondary being the other. So they've taken the steps to shore themselves up in one area, but we still have questions at quarterback. And look, that doesn't get solved overnight. You know, the Jets had a ton of money to spend, but there's not really wasn't someone out there available that they were going to go and get that was going to be, you're going to put all your eggs in that basket and say, hey, this is our guy, this is going to be our franchise quarterback. So that's something they continue to search for. You know, whether or not they find it this year in the draft or that comes down the road remains to be seen. They should be competitive. I certainly think they're relevant. They're a New York team, so they're, in my opinion, relevant no matter what. But when you're talking, you know, across the country, when people start to look at them nationally, when you look at some of the names they've added here in the last couple of weeks, and certainly they've gotten people's attention, and in most places they're being applauded for what they've done thus far. So that all makes plenty of sense. I think they've done a nice job of addressing some needs in free agency. You know, this roster isn't 100% set by any stretch of the imagination. There's still areas where they could improve, and obviously quarterback is the big one. I don't know whether or not, you know, Marcus Mariota is going to be their guy. I'd have my concerns. I'd have my question marks about that at this stage in the game. But, and we're going to find out real soon. If he's not, you know, Geno Smith and or Ryan Fitzpatrick are probably going to be the guys that are going to have to hold you over here in 2015 until they can get their hands on that young guy coming out of college that they feel they can really grow with going into the future years.
Hey, Chris, thanks again for joining us. You know, a lot of fans aren't happy with the David Harris deal. I was wondering what you thought about it. Obviously, he signed a three-year deal, $21.5 million over those 3 years with $15 million guaranteed. Do you feel like the Jets paid him too much money, or do you think, you know, that price tag is good enough for a leader of your team and, you know, potentially a guy that you want to keep away from a division rival with the Buffalo Bills?
It was high. I think it was definitely a little high when you kind of look at his production the last couple of years and sort of just the way the league is trending. I mean, when I say production, I mean the tackle numbers are there, but you're at linebacker looking for impact players now, guys that can get into the backfield, bring the quarterback down, guys that can strip the ball out, guys that can cover it, that are good in coverage. And at age 31, I don't necessarily know that David Harris is that guy. Did I have a problem with the deal? Not really. Because I don't think they had a player on the roster that's ready to step in and take his place. I was really expecting DeMario Davis to have a breakout year last year just based on the way he played in training camp, and it never quite got to that point. He's not really a liability out there, but to ask him to step in, run the defense, and basically be a three-down player the way David Harris has been for most of his career here with the Jets, I don't know that they felt comfortable with that just yet. We know they had money to spend. They have to spend it. They have to get to a certain percentage between this year and next year. So the fact that they overpaid a little bit to keep a homegrown player under contract and out of Buffalo and going to run Rex Ryan's defense and a team that you're going to have to face twice a year, you know, again, from a salary cap standpoint, did they overpay a little bit? Yes. Have they overpaid for David Harris throughout the course of his career? Probably. But he still offers some value, and I think it's a guy that, you know, Todd Bowles probably felt pretty comfortable as a holdover from the Rex Ryan years, in that this is a smart, intelligent football player who rarely comes off the field. I can run him out there, and he can get my guys lined up and make sure we're in the right spot and we're ready to go every time that an opposing offense lines up to snap the football.
Right. I agree with you there. I think David Harris, you know, he does things on the field besides, you know, the plays that he makes that are really so important to the New York Jets. And to lose a guy like this in this stage when you're trying to, especially when you're transitioning into a new defensive coach and it's going to be a different type of defense, you know, you're going to need a guy out there that's going to understand what's happening and that's going to help some of these younger players move along. So I agree with you there. My next question for you, Chris, out of all the guys that the Jets have brought in this offseason, who do you think makes the most sense, and which signing do you like? Which signing do you like the most? You know, both financially and obviously for need.
Well, I mean, I think for need, look, it's a ton of money. We'll see if he continues to be the elite player that he's been, and make sure that this marriage works out the second time around. But, you know, it would be hard to choose anyone other than Darrell Revis when you just look at how poor the Jets secondary was last year. In performance, in, you know, reputation on paper, whatever way you want to slice it. I mean, you bring in an established player like that who's coming off a Super Bowl championship in New England. He's another year removed from his knee surgery, and, you know, maybe he's playing a little bit differently than he did as a youngster, but in terms of his effectiveness, doesn't seem like he's lost a whole lot. So I really like the way the Jets structured that deal. Again, I know it's a ton of money in terms of, you know, his average cap hit year to year, what the guaranteed money is, but it's for the most part front loaded. So I think you hope you get a couple good years out of Revis. And you know what? It goes both ways. I mean, if he doesn't hold up and if he starts to decline, the Jets can get out from underneath that deal without too much trouble. If Revis continues to play at a high level, there's a very good chance 2 years from now, after his first 2 years back with the Jets here, we could be talking about another holdout situation. But, you know, we don't want to get that far ahead of ourselves. They needed to upgrade the position, and they went out and got arguably one of the best corners in the game. And not only did they add him, but obviously you remove him from the Patriots roster. So it's sort of a win-win there. So to me, I think that's the move that made the most sense from really, no matter how you slice it, all angles, from an on-field standpoint, from a contractual standpoint. I certainly understand why they made that their top priority. I really didn't think it was going to happen. I was skeptical. I thought the Pats would find a way to do whatever they needed to do to keep him in New England. It didn't work out that way. So kudos to Woody Johnson for opening up the wallet and getting over whatever past grudges there might have been there between the Jets and Revis's camp. And obviously credit to Mike McCagnan for landing a big fish right off the bat.
Chris, what do you make of the Percy Harvin situation? Obviously, you know, he was a big number here with the $10.5 million right on the cap. He goes to the Bills for roughly around $6 million for the one-year deal. Do you think that this was the type, you know, in my opinion, I think they got rid of Percy Harvin because, A, they wanted to free up that money to go after other people, even though they still have a good amount of salary cap and good amount of money left, and, B, you know, I think that they just felt that having all of these wide receivers and not a clear-cut quarterback in place might be a waste in terms of having all these, as weird as that sounds, you know, having all of these weapons and having a quarterback that can't use them to their full potential, and it's almost like putting money in a spot that you're not going to get your most out of it. Do you think that being the fact that they had so much to spend, that it was a mistake for them to get rid of Percy Harvin, and seeing what he got with the Bills, do you think, or do you think this was a mutual, you know, agreeing upon, you know, getting rid of Percy, freeing up the money, and just moving on?
I think they would have liked to keep him if it was possible. It would have been a luxury to have your top three wide receivers be Decker, Marshall, and Harvin. I mean, there's not a lot of teams around the league that can boast that. So my opinion on the whole matter was always, I said, I don't think there's a need for them to move on from Harvin until they had to. And what I meant by that was, you know, the Jets had a deadline where the compensation going back to the Seahawks for that trade was going to be determined fourth round pick or sixth round pick. Well, that wasn't until March 18th, which, as we know, is tomorrow. So I was always of the opinion that, you know, unless they really needed that money to do what they were looking to do in free agency, I'd hang on to him and just see, because, you know, as we've seen sometimes in the past, you may have a lot of cap space. You might have guys you're interested in, but you still have to get them in and sign on the dotted line. So I just wasn't of the opinion that you'd want to get rid of an asset until you had to. Obviously, the Jets had plans to make major upgrades to their defense, and they sunk a lot of money into the defense. So ultimately, they did need that money. I know you're saying, you know, they still have a decent amount of cap space left, but if you kind of crunch the numbers a little, we don't have the contract details yet for Cromartie and Gilchrist, but, I mean, I'm hard-pressed to believe they're going to have much more than about $10 million left. And then when you factor in needing about $7 million for your rookie draft class, I mean, the Jets have spent most of the cap space they have for this year, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that's why they got to the point with Harvin where they just couldn't justify, you know, having that luxury of your third receiver being paid $10.5 million. I do believe that they probably approached his side about, you know, renegotiating, taking a cut, or moving around the money to bring down his cap number. And I have a feeling Harvin's camp kind of decided, look, you know, I came in, I was a good soldier, I was a good teammate for the second half of the year. Fact is, you don't have a really strong quarterback in place here, so let me go look elsewhere and see where I can kind of rejuvenate my career. Now, one could argue Buffalo's not really the place to do that, but
right.
Consider
and
they don't really have a...
$10 million, too. That was the whole thing that really, that I was kind of confused about. It's almost like, look, the Bills and the Jets are kind of in similar positions in terms of where, you know, good defense, they have questions at quarterback. And it's almost like Rex Ryan is going to a similar situation. And Percy Harvin goes to Buffalo on that short term, you know, and taking a $4 million pay cut. Do you think that Percy Harvin really didn't want to be here and, you know, really had that attachment to Rex Ryan to even go to Buffalo and take a pay cut?
I don't know if I really look at it as a pay cut, because the Jets made it clear, you know, we're not going to pay you $10.5 million. So it's not like Harvin said, you know, no thanks, I don't want your $10.5 million. I'm going to go take $6 or $6.5 million from the Bills. I just think it got to a point where he probably wanted to have all his options open, have a chance to pick and choose from where he wanted to land. We know that Rex Ryan is a big fan of Percy Harvin, so to me that suggests you're going to see the ball in his hands a whole lot this year, whether it's as a receiver, you know, whether it's in the screen game, whether it's a handoff of him out of the backfield. I know Sammy Watkins is there, but I think Harvin's kind of gambling on himself a little bit to say, let me go somewhere where I know the coach is a big fan of me, let me get a ton of touches, I'm going to put up some stats, I'm going to stay healthy, and then, you know, God willing, if I can do all that, I'll be able to cash in as a free agent this time next. next year. So that, I mean, that's kind of my read on the situation. I think that it just didn't quite work out for both parties. And, you know, it was a deal that, to me, is kind of a push. The Jets gave up a sixth round pick to take a look at Harvin last year. You know, he had a couple of nice games for them down the stretch there. You know, we knew it wasn't going to impact their record in terms of making a playoff run or anything like that, but it was an asset that they added to their roster. Ultimately, this new regime decided they'd rather have Brandon Marshall than Percy Harvin, and I'm certainly okay with that, you know, with that analysis and that decision moving forward.
Okay, so we all know that the Jets obviously brought in guys like Revis and Cromartie and Skrine, but you know, I'm looking at a position like defensive line, defensive tackle, and you know, obviously Dusable and Kendrick Ellis are free agents, and Kendrick Ellis is actually visiting the Giants tonight. You know, what does that position look like to you? Do you think that they're going to bring back guys like Dusable or Ellis, or would you like to sign guys like Chris Canty or a guy like Tommy Kelly?
I think that comes down to what Todd Bowles is comfortable with. I mean, you can understand each coach maybe having some guys that he's been in the trenches and hadn't gone through the wars with in the past and as his previous stops as an assistant coach. So, you know, I think Legay Dusable did a nice job for the Jets under Rex Ryan. Kind of, you know, he was a guy that kind of bounced around, a bit of a journeyman, and found a home and a role with the Jets and Rex Ryan's defense. So, I don't know what... It really comes down to what Todd Bowles is looking for from those depth guys. You know, is he looking for more versatility? Is he okay with what he saw on tape from those guys that maybe didn't get as many snaps when Rex was here? So, Kendrick Ellis is still relatively young. You get the sense that he hasn't quite scratched the surface of his potential, but... You know, with the emergence of Damon Harrison, he kind of got pushed off, you know, pushed down the depth chart a little bit. I know the Jets are interested in retaining him, and he wanted to test the market, which he's obviously doing. So I think they probably have those guys on speed dial, and there's probably some other players that Bowles has had a connection with in the past. You mentioned Chris Canty. There's some other guys that, you know, in Miami and Dallas and Arizona that he's had some experience with. So I think those are lesser moves and aren't going to cost a whole lot, that the Jets probably have some time to figure that stuff out. It's not really anything pressing or a real priority at the moment. So it's hard to get a real sense for when all said and done, when we get to camp, which guys are going to be on the roster, which aren't, but I really can't rule anyone out at this point.
CeeLo, one thing I wanted to ask you, what do you see as the next move for the Jets going forward? Are they done with free agency? Are they getting ready to, you know, to get ready for the draft? Do you think there's going to be any more signings, or do you think that they have kind of, you know, put free agency to bed and they're ready to move on for the draft?
There might be some minor stuff, like we talked about, some D-line depth, you know, maybe another offensive lineman for some depth. I don't really think anything that's going to really open up a lot of eyes or raise any eyebrows or cost them a whole lot. As we touched on, I mean, I'm still waiting for first-year cap hits on Gilchrist and Cromartie just to see exactly how much space they're left to work with. But they do need to leave themselves a little bit of a cushion for the draft and really just some cushion as you head into training camp. You never know what can happen. Guys can get hurt. You might have to sign someone at the last minute. Somebody might come available once we get past, or teams can start designating players for post-June 1 cuts. So you never want to put yourself right up against the edge there where you have no flexibility. So I think they're at a point where they feel pretty comfortable with what they were able to get done in the early stages here, and we've kind of reached this quiet period now where maybe you let the market for the middle tier and the lower tier players establish itself, and if there's someone they have an eye on that they feel could be a real nice value buy for them, maybe that's something they investigate. But I have a feeling right now a lot of it's going to be gearing up for the draft. You know, we've heard McCagnan and some of the other front office types have been out and about checking out pro days. They're going to have some private workouts set up with certain players, Marcus Mariota included. So I think they're going to kind of be finishing up their homework on the players that are going to be available to them in the draft. And, you know, before we know, we blink here in a couple of days, we're going to be a month away. So it's going to come quickly. And I think they've set themselves up with what they've done in free agency, that they have some options in the draft. I don't think that they're required to pick a quarterback or required to pick an edge rusher. I think they can go in a number of different directions, which is always what you're looking for. You don't want to be predictable. You want teams to not really have a feel for what you're going to do, because then all your options are open once you get on the board and once you're on the clock. You want to trade out. You know, is there a team that's going to look to jump in front of you because they know you're looking to take a certain player? You don't want to put yourself in that spot. And I think McCagnan is obviously someone that's going to be aware of that, considering his experience and his background is in college scouting. So he knows what that's all about.
Chris, last question for you. Most important question of the night. We're going to let you go. Cam Talbot or Henrik Lundqvist going down the stretch?
That's one of the easiest questions for me to answer in the history of my life. I mean, kudos to Cam Talbot for what he did. My hat's off to him. I never thought the Rangers would play as well and be as effective as they were without Lundqvist, but Lundqvist is the guy. It's his team. That's why they gave him all the money last year. It's why they continue to trade away first-round draft picks to try and make this roster as strong as they possibly can. They're making the run right now. The window is closing. Maybe they get another chance next year, but right now, I mean, they're in about as good a position as they can be.
Take your analyst hat off for a second and put your fan hat on. Is this the year that the Rangers are going to win the Stanley Cup? Yes or no? Point blank.
I sure hope so. So I'll say yes.
That's such a cop-out answer.
I know it is, but you know what makes me nervous? I haven't enjoyed a lot of success with this team, so I'm still getting used to the fact that they find ways to win and that they've been as effective and productive as they've been the last few years. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know what I mean? It's hard for me to imagine that they're going to be able to make it back to the Cup Final in consecutive years. I've never seen that in my lifetime, but I sure hope so.
All right, Chris, you know what? You're politically correct answers.
That's
keep
right.
For now, but I know in the back of your mind, you're like, yeah, baby, we're going all the way. Chris McCressy from WFAN, always a pleasure, my man.
All right, guys, thanks for having me.
All right, that's CeeLo from WFAN. I always got to throw out the Rangers question when he's on the air because I know he's itching to talk hockey all the time. He's one of the biggest Ranger fans that I know. I actually had him on my show probably when I was, right around the senior in high school. I started talking to CeeLo on my other show, and he is such a Rangers fan. Joe is, he loves to put his fan hat on and talk hockey once in a while. So you got to throw it in there.
I'm not a Rangers fan. I'm a Devils fan, unfortunately. But I just want to talk Jets. I want to talk Jets right now. the Mets with Wheeler going down, the Nets losing all these games. So, let's just focus on the positives and all the big moves the Jets made, re-signing Tanner Purdom and, having Philip Adams leave for the Falcons is really going to hurt us.
Oh, man. Let me tell you, those are some barn burner moves that have happened in the NFL the past couple of days. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on Jet Nation Radio, I want to hear from you, the fans out there. I want to talk Revis. I want to talk Cromartie. I want to talk Screen. I want to talk Gilgrave. I want to talk New York Jets football tonight on Jet Nation Radio. The call line is open, 646-716-4697. I want to hear from you about what you think of the New York Jets offseason. What grade do you give them so far? Are you giving them an A+, an A-, or are you saying, I'm not too sure, I'm going with a B? Back after this. You're listening to Jet Nation Radio. Pack it up, pack it in, let me begin. Packing the wind, battle me, that's a sin. I won't ever slack up, punk you better back up. Try and play the role and you're the whole crew will act up. Get up, stand up, come on.
Since the average attention span is now about 27 seconds thanks to ADD, ADHD, and bad TV, if you're a business of any kind, how do you reach your future clients? You need a marketing partner ready to implement those online strategies and properly target the right audience with the right information using the right media. You need the Strategic Peacock. From mobile to multimedia, the Strategic Peacock will enhance your online presence and help create potential growth. When you're ready to understand how the modern mind works, go to strategicpeacock.com and develop the right web strategy for you. Strategicpeacock.com.
New music.
Are you an independent artist? Do you struggle with getting your music out there without burning a hole in your pocket? The Indie Outbreak is the perfect radio show for you. Broadcasted around the world, heard by thousands of incredible fans, always on demand. You can be too. Interested in being part of the outbreak? Go to IndieOutbreak.com and click the Submit tab for details. Be part of the epidemic sweeping over the world. Indie Outbreak. IndieOutbreak.com.
Amazing.
What seems to be the problem?
I don't know, doctor. I just feel sick.
What have you been listening to recently?
I don't really know. Just whatever's on, I guess.
Seems to me like you have a serious case of bad music.
Am I gonna die? Is it contagious? Is it dangerous?
It can be dangerous. It can cause headaches, earaches, vomiting, nausea, and in extreme cases, even death.
Oh no! What should I do?
I am going to prescribe to you 60 milligrams of Indie Outbreak. It'll help prevent bad music disease and will make your life better and worth living.
Thanks, Doc!
Anybody can be beat!
You're listening to Jet Nation Radio, and here are your hosts, Joe Blewett and Brandon Dowling.
And the home of the Jets!
And we are back off the break here on Jet Nation Radio. Okay, so obviously we didn't have enough time really to dive into it last week in regards to the Darrell Revis signing, and then, of course, followed up by Antonio Cromartie. But let's talk right now Ryan Fitzpatrick and the impact that this trade makes for the Jets. First off, I'm hearing a lot of talk, you know, a lot of people saying, well, you know, you should have just waited for Ryan Fitzpatrick to get traded. To get released. You should have waited till he was cut. You know, you could have went out and signed him. You didn't have to give away a draft pick. Here's the, you know, obviously the reason why that the Jets decided to make a trade is because for two reasons. One, they liked this current contract structure that was with Houston. Obviously, he's going to be making a very, very low cap figure this year for the Jets. And B is, if Ryan Fitzpatrick would have hit the open market, there's no telling that he was going to come to the New York Jets, because the quarterback market out there is so slim that he is actually one of the guys that other teams would look at, like the Browns, you know, even like, you know, another team out there that's in search of a quarterback, you know, the Vikings. So I think the Jets made the right move in trading for Fitzpatrick, because you have to look at it from the point of view of, look at the money that Josh McCown got. Look at the money that he got out there in Cleveland. And then look at Ryan Fitzpatrick, who, numbers-wise, is a lot better than some of the guys that were out there this year. So I like the trade that they made to bring this guy in here to give Geno Smith some competition, and obviously a guy who knows Chan Gailey's offense and was successful in it.
Yeah, like you said, you know, we didn't really get to dive into many topics. Just last show, we didn't get to dive into Revis, Cromartie, all these guys he brought in. But like with Fitzpatrick, you know, in my personal opinion, I think he could have been the top quarterback in free agency this year. I think he's better than Hoyer. Mallett maybe was a name that I would rather see, but you know, he's very unknown. I believe he has two touchdowns and three interceptions in his entire career. Obviously Jake Locker retired along with a whole bunch of other people this week, which is just absolutely out of control. But you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he had good years under Gailey. Gailey got him that huge contract that he got. Like you said, his $3.5 million cap number for this year is a lot less than what it would be if he hit the open market. You know, you see guys like McCown getting a whole bunch of money. Fitzpatrick could have been getting paid, you know, $5-6 million a year, and then we would have had to get into a bidding war with one of these teams who needed quarterbacks. So we guarantee that he came to the Jets for a low number with a 7th-round draft pick that can potentially be a 6th. I believe it has to do with starting, how many games he starts or how much time he plays. But hopefully he doesn't have to start. I think, you know, he's a decent quarterback. I think if he's on his game, you know, he's a guy who can throw 3 touchdowns and 300 yards and no picks one game. But then the next game he comes out and he throws three interceptions and gains 87 yards. So he's very inconsistent. But do I think he's better than a guy like Vic and guys like Garrard and all these guys we've had in the last couple of years? Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah, exactly. He had 17 touchdowns last year, 8 interceptions. He had a 95 quarterback rating with the Texans. And the last Jet quarterback to complete, I believe it's 66% of his passes was Brett, or 63% of his passes was Brett Favre when we got him. So it's not a bad option to have behind Geno. I think he can get it done with some of these weapons. So, you know, I definitely like that move. Obviously, it doesn't limit us from drafting a guy, but he's definitely a solid backup. But like I said, I'm hoping it's Geno, you know, taking the throne this year under, you know, Gailey's spread offense.
Right. I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick was brought in here, and honestly, I think it's Ryan Fitzpatrick's job to lose. I think that they're bringing him in here, understanding where Geno Smith went last year, understanding how he operated in the offense, the turnovers. Ryan Fitzpatrick is a low turnover guy. Obviously, you know, he's inconsistent, like you said. But if it's really put up or shut up time for Geno Smith this year. With the signings the Jets have made, you know, I watch this football team. All Jet fans watch this football team with Mark Sanchez go to back-to-back AFC championship games that was built on a good secondary and a good defense that was controlling football games. That's what made the Jets successful. That was the bread and butter of this team, was their defense. Last year it was, but the defense wasn't as good to overcome the offense, and it's been that way for a couple years now. So I think Geno Smith really needs to sit down. You know, he's obviously working out with Brandon Marshall, I heard, in Florida, but this has to be the year that Geno Smith comes in training camp. He understands that, you know, he might not even start this year, and he needs to win this job, and he needs to win it outright. He needs to, you know, outperform Fitzpatrick. He needs to show that he can be the guy in some way, shape, or form. Do I think that he's going to do that? I don't know. You know, I still think it's his third year now. So now you're to the point where it's put up or shut up time for Geno Smith.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. With the weapons he has on offense right now, you know, there's obviously still some needs. You need some depth at the offensive line. The guard spot is a little shaky, even with bringing Carpenter in and bringing back Cologne. I'm surprised you haven't, you know, said something to me about that yet. Even though he's a leader, and I think if he's, you know, the sixth, seventh, eighth guy on the roster and he's there for depth, then that's fine. But if Willie Cologne is starting next year, Brandon, I'm really going to lose my, lose myself. I'm gonna absolutely go out of control. But, you know, Geno Smith definitely has to prove himself with Curley being here, with Marshall being here, with Decker being here. His offensive line has slightly improved from last year. I think they're still going to make some moves, hopefully draft a guy early. The wide receiver depth is I think there's some concerns there. I think their fourth, fifth, sixth guys are very unknown. But, you know, with the top three guys, who really cares that much? Obviously, we'll bring in some more people, hopefully. Not a Greg Jennings or anything like that, I still think. Maybe they re-sign a guy like Greg Sauls, who we talked about before. Hopefully a guy like Shaq Evans steps up. So there's some questions on offense still, but Geno has way too many weapons around him right now, along with the top run, a top 10 running game in the NFL to, you know, if he hits the wall and he really starts sucking in the beginning of the year, then put Fitzpatrick in. I want this to be a even shot. If there's 80 snaps in practice,
I think he has to show that he can be the guy in training camp in the preseason. I don't think they're going to hand him the job week one. I don't. I don't think they're going to you know, Geno's our guy. He's going to be the leader of this. If he struggles in free agency, I think this is going to be the first real quarterback competition for the New York Jets that we've seen in a very long time. I think that they're legitimately bringing in Ryan Fitzpatrick to play quarterback for the New York Jets. It's not a gimmick. It's not a Mike Vick gimmick. It's not a Garrard gimmick. It's not a Tim Tebow gimmick. Okay? This is a legitimate guy who knows the offense and the offensive coordinator. This is his guy. I mean, look at it this way. Todd Bowles doesn't know Geno Smith. Chan Gailey doesn't know Geno Smith. Todd Bowles has trust in Chan Gailey to run this offense. Who does Chan Gailey trust? Ryan Fitzpatrick. So if Geno Smith doesn't come into camp and doesn't wow people, and they don't say to themselves, this is our guy, man. You know, this is who's going to lead our football team this year. We're confident with Geno Smith as a starter. Then he's not going to start because Chan Gailey, Fitzpatrick already has the upper hand. He's been successful in Chan Gailey's offense. So Geno Smith has to come out and he has to put the pass behind him, and he needs to play the way he played in the last four games of the season, like he did in his rookie year, consistently. If he does that and he shows that he can be a decent quarterback, a quarterback that produces in this league, he'll play and he'll start and he'll be the guy. But if during training camp in the preseason he struggles, you know, he's not on the same page and he's not picking up this new offense, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be the starter week one.
Yeah, no, I don't think at all that it's he has the upper hand. I think he has the upper hand in the fact that he knows the offense already and he knows Chan Gailey. I think this should be really a 50-50 split. They're both going to have a completely even shot to start. But, you know, obviously Jets fans, you know, I hear a lot of Jets fans saying, oh, Geno Patrick start, but when you're talking about a 34, I believe he's 34-year-old quarterback, why would you want him to start over a guy like Geno Smith, who has potential? It's not like we haven't seen anything from him. You know, obviously his first year he had 12 touchdowns, 21 interceptions, and then he improved a little bit in year two. He had 13 touchdowns and 13 interceptions. So, you know, he improved. Let's see what he does in the offense. I don't want to give up on Geno yet. I think the people who want to give up on him and want to see him fail, you know, wanting their quarterback of their team to fail is just a complete joke. You have to give the kid a chance. So we'll see what he does in training camp. But if he wins the job, I believe that he truly won it. And you know, then he starts. But you know, Brandon, another area that.
Here's the thing, though, Joe. If I want to say, I think we're on the same page on this. If they draft Marcus Mariota, Geno Smith's career with the New York Jets is over.
See, the thing with Mariota and the confusing situation that it is now, you know, Mariota, his pro day, I read some news about it. It wasn't, you know, he didn't impress people that much. He underwhelmed a little bit. So, you know how I feel about Mariota. I think he's going to have to sit a year or two, and with the players the Jets signed now, you know, Marshall is older. Revis isn't too old, but he's getting older. Cromartie is older. We're putting ourselves in a position where we're going to have to win in the next, you know,
yeah,
three to 4 years.
But Joe, I don't think if Marcus Mariota is drafted by the Jets, I can tell you right now, we're naive if we think that he's not going to be playing quarterback for them next year at some point. I don't think he's going to be sitting on the bench for a year or two. I don't think he's going to be taking a back seat and watching guys. Listen, I think the Jets have put themselves in a position. I understand where you're coming from with the Revis and Cromartie thing, with the winning now and all that stuff. I get it. But I also think that the Jets have put themselves in a position to be they have a foundation right now. Because we also are forgetting about Milner and McDougal, who are two guys that are going to be coming off injuries. We don't know where they're going to be in their progression in terms of their injuries and if they're going to be ready to get back on the field right away. But this football team is not only built to be successful now next year, but in years to come. Screen, young guy. Milner, young guy. McDougal, young guy. Wilkerson, young guy. Sheldon Richardson, young guy. DeMario Davis, young guy. There's a lot of youth on this team. And we saw the Jets be successful when they had youth and they also had veterans in the locker room, like Tony Richardson, like LaDainian Tomlinson, like Damian Woody. They had those guys to go with these veterans. So I think they're getting back to that. I do. I think they're getting back to having top veteran talent and a lot of youth. I think this is the best the Jets have been set up to succeed long-term than in a very long time. Now, it's going to come down to the quarterback position. If Geno Smith falls flat on his face and Ryan Fitzpatrick is your starting quarterback for this year, you don't know how far the Jets can go with him. I mean, maybe a playoff team, maybe at best. But then you're looking at yourself saying next year you have to draft a quarterback. You have to try and find your franchise guy again. If the Jets believe that Marcus Mariota is their top guy and is their quarterback for the future, Geno Smith is done. You're not going to draft Marcus Mariota with the attention that Geno Smith can still produce and be a quarterback for this team. You're not going to do it.
Oh, yeah, but see, if you were going to tell me right now that the Jets are going to draft Marcus Mariota and he's going to start in the first 5 weeks, then I definitely wouldn't want to draft him because from what I've seen from Marcus Mariota, that guy absolutely needs to sit to develop with the college system he came out of, Brandon. But, you know, let's stop talking about Marcus Mariota because he's not on the team right now. We have to talk about the secondary, Brandon. I want to know your opinion
old
gang coming back together, on Batman and Robin coming back together. You know, a guy like Cromartie, he's not the best Jet. Obviously, there's guys like Revis. There's guys like Keyshawn Johnson. There's guys like Curtis Martin. You know, there's a whole bunch of guys who are better than Cromartie. But the love that Cromartie has for the Jets, I just absolutely love him. I don't know if you've seen his Twitter bio, but, you know, his Twitter bio reads, proud to be back home around some of the best fans in New York. Love the support through the season, even though I was a Cardinal. Jets fans are the best. All in capitals. You can tell the guys is pumped up to be here. So I want to hear your opinion on, you know, the top of the Jet depth chart being Darrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie, Buster Skrine. And then on top of that, you know, your fourth and fifth guys are Dee Milliner, Dexter McDougal, and then not even to mention a guy who was our number one cornerback next year, might be our fifth or sixth guy in Marcus Williams, and then a guy who was a number two in Darren Walls might be our seventh corner. How do you feel about the New York Jets corner position?
Oh, I mean, I will tell you this much. I will not be whining and screaming for Brandon Flowers to come to the New York Jets come this offseason like I was
good
last year.
Thank God.
Because this is... The Jets have done a complete turnaround on this secondary. The overhaul is complete. I mean, you're just putting yourself in a position to win. I mean, Darrell Revis coming back to the Jets, it's not only a good football decision, it's a good business decision. It's a good business decision for the Jets. It's a good business decision for Darrell Revis when you look at how much he got paid. At the end of the day, like Antrell Rowe says, it's all about the business decisions that these guys make. And Darrell Revis is eating up the fact that everybody wanted him back. Everybody wants him back in green and white. And the Jets are eating up the fact that the fans are now excited about the Jets again. I mean, you're sitting here as the season ends. We're sitting at 4-12. We're miserable. Every fan out there is coming off one of the worst seasons the Jets have ever had. We don't know what direction they're going to go in. We don't know what they're going to do with their secondary. We watched, you know, below average guys last year throughout the entire year. It was almost like a tryout. You know, you lose your head coach that everybody loves. Your GM gets fired after 2 years because clearly he's not the guy. Your quarterback situation is a disaster. I mean, everything was just in shambles. And then you come out and you sign Darrell Revis. Bang. Step number one. You sign Buster Skrine. You know, a guy that I think is going to be here for a long time and is very underrated. I think, you know, he was in the top three in passes defended, has a little bit of an issue. He's a very physical corner, has a little bit of an issue with the penalties and might get a little too physical, especially in today's NFL. Great signing. You put him in the slot. You look at a guy like Antonio Cromartie, a guy who he might love the Jets more than anybody else out there. I don't know if he loves his house in New Jersey or if he loves the Jets. It might be a combination of both. But this guy, you know, they talked about the money that the Jets gave him and the contract. He actually had offers from other teams for more money. Yep. And and if it's coming from the Cardinals and the Cowboys, those two teams are in a better position to win the Super Bowl right now than the New York Jets, point blank. So he's taking less money to come to a team that he knows is probably not going to be ready to make a run at a Super Bowl in the next couple seasons. So I look at the additions that they've made. They knew that they have a top defensive line with Wilkerson, Richardson, and Damon Harrison. That's the fact of this defense. That was the backbone. You know, when the Jets were going to AFC Championship games, you're not going to tell me that it was because of the defensive line. It wasn't. It was because of the way the secondary defended teams and the way that they could bring the house and blitz all the time with the man-to-man coverage, breaking down the X's and O's on Jet Nation Radio. That's what they did. That's what happened. So you're now getting to the point on defense that you can tell Darrell Revis to take away half of the field, Antonio Cromartie to practically do the same because he was one of the best corners in football last year as a cover corner, and you have Skrine in the slot along with Milliner and McDougal. This defense has all the intangibles to be the best defense in the National Football League. I believe that because they're getting back to having the ability to do whatever they want. You want to blitz? Go for it. Got the best cover corners in the game. You want to bring three guys and rush the quarterback and drop back eight? Go for it. Yeah. I got three great pass rushers. The ability is there to do so many things. So I look at these signings and I look at the depth at corner and it wows me. Because if you're a Jets fan and you're looking at adding Brandon Marshall, Darrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie, Skrine, and bringing back Bilal Powell and David Harris and adding Fitzpatrick as an intangible. I mean, they really, really did it right this year. And they did it right for the fans, and I think that was the best thing that overall, you know?
Yeah, I don't even know if we dived into Brandon Marshall yet. I'll give you my opinion on, you know, all the Revis talk and all that. I think this has the potential to be a better defense than 2009, 2010. Obviously, Revis is older. Cromartie's older, but they're older, but look at the defensive line. You know, the defensive line right now, plus the secondary. I never want to hear again in my life from ESPN radio that Sione Puha, Chris Jenkins, and Sean Ellis is even close to Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson, and Damon Harrison. So that was a joke. The defensive line plus the secondary is absolutely nuts. In 2009, 2010, we didn't have a guy like Screen in the slot who, when I watch film on this guy, he can really, really lock you down in press man coverage, even though, you know, he's 5'9", 185 pounds. He broke up 49 passes in four seasons, so he definitely is a lockdown corner. Obviously, he has some problems with penalties. Like you said, I believe he had 15 penalties called on him last year, and only 11 were accepted. And that's one of his problems, that he's too physical. He hits people too far down the field. And another problem with him is he bites on double moves a lot because he tries to make a play every single play, and he'll bite on the double move to go for the pick. But that's about the only problems I can see on him. He's just as good in the slot as he is outside. So he's really, really a big addition to the team. I really like Buster Skrine. Obviously Revis, I don't have to hit on too much about Revis. You know, he in the whole entire playoffs last year, he only allowed 3 catches for 25 yards. So that's what you can say about Revis. He's a great corner. In my opinion, in your opinion, he's the best corner in the NFL. So we got that. Cromartie is a guy who is definitely a solid
Joe
number 2.
Joe Blewett is on the Revis train, ladies and gentlemen. All aboard. Keep
going. I like Revis.
You're on it. Just say. My name is Joe Blewett, and I'm on the Revis train. Go ahead.
You know what? Yep. Brandon, I'm happy. I've had my corned beef and cabbage. I had my Yinglings. I'm not going to lie to you. When Revis comes back, it's hard not to go to YouTube and type in, look up the video of the I'm Coming Home song with Revis highlights in the background. I've watched it. I'm excited for Revis to come back. I definitely like the secondary, not even mentioning Marcus Gilchrist, who, you know, like I said before, he locks down the big tight ends and wide receivers. He's very versatile. He's going to be that Tyrann Mathieu kind of guy. He's a good cover corner. He has some problems with, you know, dropping back deep in zones, but hopefully that improves under a guy who, in Todd Bowles, who was a safety in the NFL. So we'll see about that. Obviously, the thing I noticed about Gilchrist is he has some problems covering speedy wide receivers. He gets burned a lot with that, but you know, he's not going to be playing slot corner or cornerback with the Jets defense. So I think he's also a solid signing. I think $5.5 million for him every year is a little bit much. Like you said, with the Cromartie getting $8 million a year, I think that's a little bit much. But he left bigger offers on the table, especially when you see guys like Byron Maxwell getting $10 million a year. So the secondary is revamped. In the next couple of weeks, I want to see a guy like Kendrick Ellis, Luigi Dusable, and even a guy who we haven't talked about and we're not going to need to talk about, but just a quick point about a guy like Nick Ballour, who is one of our best special teams players. I think that they need to lock him down. I think that's something that hasn't been looked at a lot. Brandon, going into another guy named Brandon, who is one of my favorite, great Jet now, Brandon Marshall.
What a great name.
I wanted to get your opinion on that because I don't even think we got to talk about it last week because, last week was just jam-packed. We had a whole bunch of callers. We had Christian Dyer on. The Revis news broke. You almost cried. I wanted to get your opinion on him. The last wide receiver the Jets had who had over 1,000 yards was Jericho Cotchery in 2007. Marshall from 2007 to 2014 had 1,000 yards every single year. He's a bona fide number one. It's the best receiver I think we've had since Keyshawn Johnson, if not better. Obviously, he didn't have 1,000 yards last year, but he battled some injury problems, which happens when you get a little bit older. But I think he's still a bona fide number one. And like I said last week, I think the Jets have a top 5-1-2 punch at receiver as well. So how do you feel about the Brandon Marshall trade?
I think it's a great trade for the Jets. Again, moves like this that are low risk, high reward, the money that they're saving and bringing in this guy. And look, if Brandon Marshall, is going to get it in the NFL, if he's going to put his head on straight and he's going to understand what he has to do to be successful in this league, I think now's the time for him to get it. You know, he went from Denver to Miami to Chicago to the Jets. You know, it's like, where in the world is Brandon Marshall? You know, that's his story right now. So I think that this is a good move for the Jets. One being is I think Brandon Marshall is ready to become, you know, to get to that next level in terms of being a veteran leader on a football team. Because if he knows that he screws up this opportunity, not only is he going to lose money, because that's all everybody cares about in the NFL, let's be honest, is how much you're going to make and what your value is. So I think overall, Brandon Marshall was a great pickup by the Jets. I think you have to have big beast receivers. And now you have Decker, you have Marshall. And as much as I like Percy Harvin, I think Brandon Marshall is an upgrade from Percy Harvin. I think he produces. I think, you know, the guy is a machine in terms of staff.
Oh, yeah.
So I look at Brandon Marshall and it excites me. It excites me because it's a big target. It's a huge guy that's going to make plays. He's going to get open. A red zone target. I love the Brandon Marshall signing. And the reason why I like it so much is I think that he understands more than anybody else that he needs to put his head on straight, play football, shut his mouth, and kind of rejuvenate his career, because a lot of people look at him in a bad light, and maybe that's why the Jets were able to land him for what they did.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, a bona fide number one receiver doesn't just become available for, you know, basically a fifth-round draft pick. Obviously, they gave us a seventh, too, so we really traded basically nothing for him. Right. You know, he has 3 years left on his deal, $24 million. We're paying him about $8 million a year, but only 1 year is guaranteed. So it's not like it ties the Jets' hand behind their back. If a guy like Cooper is there at six, you can still take a guy like Cooper, put him at slot receiver, and then maybe you let Brandon Marshall go next year. But you hear the things about off the field with Brandon Marshall. You hear how he's a cancer in the locker room, but then you have to understand that Todd Bowles coached him in Miami. His receiver coach, Dorrell, also coached him in Miami. So obviously they know what they're getting into. They wouldn't trade for a guy who they think would be a cancer to the locker room. And over the last couple of years, you really haven't heard too much about Marshall doing things like he did in Denver and even Miami. So I think he's past that. I think he wants to rejuvenate his career in New York. And he said on a press conference, which I'm not sure why it's not up yet, but I was listening to it live, and he's basically saying that, you know, he really wants to finish his career here, and he likes New York, and he wants to help out a young quarterback in Geno. So that, I like that move. Brandon, he's definitely a great wide receiver. But something else I want to talk about a little bit too, we didn't get to talk about this. It seemed like we didn't get to talk about a lot last week. There's so many things going on. You know, just give me your quick opinion on the David Harris thing. Obviously, we talked about Chris Lopresti with it. You know, Harris resigned, and then after he resigned, he said, after hearing the plans and vision of Coach Bowles and Mike Maccagnan, there was no doubt I wanted to return. So obviously he might have told them that they were getting guys like Revis back and all this. But, you know, like I said before, his deal is a little bit much. He's getting around $7 million a year for the next 3 years. It's a little much for David Harris. But when you're looking at a guy who's a leader of your defense, who in the last 4 years has been top 10 in tackles and sacks from the inside linebacker position, obviously he has some problems with, you know, coverage. But he's a very solid linebacker, and you're keeping him away from, you know, Buffalo. And then one more thing I want to talk about, you know, just hit on that real quick, Brandon. I want to ask you one more question before we get off the air.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Go ahead.
You want to ask me a twofold, Joe? Ask me a twofold. Go ahead.
Okay. Write that first question down. You know, We hit on it before. All right, good. It's cemented in your head. You know, and one more thing I want to talk about, Brandon, as I wanted to ask you how you felt about the offensive line. We asked Chris Lopresti about it, obviously too, and we have depth, and we have some young guys who could really, really step up. And I'm really excited to see what a guy like Dakota Dozier does, because I really think that he could be a good guard. But you look at DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who I think is a average to slightly above average left tackle at this point in his career. Obviously, Nick Mangold was an absolute beast. We both love him. Giacomini is average too. But when you look at left guard and right guard, you know, you have Ibushi, you have Winters, you have Carpenter, and then you have Cologne. So I wanted to know if you feel like I do, that the Jets need to bring in a guy, you know, in at least the second or third round to compete with those guys, because when you're going against defensive lines like the Bills have, and obviously the Dolphins just brought in Sue. I think the Jets are really going to have to upgrade the offensive line. I think that's one of their biggest needs, along with quarterback, which I don't think is going to be answered. And then in the first two rounds, Brandon, I honestly want an outside linebacker and then a guard right after that. So I wanted to ask you how you felt about that too.
You know what? I think let's start with the David Harris question. David Harris brings, you know, you have to look at it from when we were talking about David Harris, is he was looking at taking less money to go to a contender. He wanted to win a Super Bowl. Then Rex Ryan leaves. He was going to go to Buffalo. I think you cannot – there are some guys that you can put a price tag on. And look, if David Harris was looking for ridiculous amounts of money and he was – you know, it was going to really, really hold the Jets hostage and it was going to put them in a position where they couldn't go out and make moves, that's a different story. Then I'm going to say, okay, let's move on. But – when you're bringing in a new defensive guy and you're bringing in a new system, new faces, and a complete new look to your team, the players are going to need somebody to look to that's going to be a leader of the football team. And David Harris is the leader of the defense. He's the guy who runs the defense. He's the leader of the New York Jets. He's, you know, one of the longest tenured Jets on the team right now. So I think the Jets said, okay, you know, we have a lot of money to spend. Let's go out and let's keep, you know, like Chris said, a homegrown guy like David Harris, because I don't think you could put a dollar figure on him. I don't think you could put a dollar figure on him unless it's outrageous. I think, yeah, did you slightly overpay for David Harris? Yes. Did you give him more money than you would have liked to? Yes. But are you ready to walk away from a leader of your defense when you're bringing in a new defensive guy that's going to change the entire team? I don't think they were. I think that they know what David Harris can bring, and I think that that outweighs the fact that he's getting up there in age and can't produce like he used to. At the end of the day, my saying for today, I think David Harris brings a lot more values in the locker room and on the field other than making tackles and interceptions and bringing the blitz. So I'm okay with David Harris coming back to the Jets at that number. I mean, it's high, but you have to understand where the Jets are coming from. In terms of the offensive line, I think they've done a lot to add some depth to it. You got Carpenter. I know you mentioned, you know, Dakota Dozier. I think the Jets are comfortable where they're, you know, going in with this offensive line. Could they add somebody in the draft? The offensive linemen are always up there in the draft for everyone. They're always trying to grab an offensive lineman. So I think that the offensive line's improved. I think you got out and brought a versatile guard in here from Seattle. So I think that was a good move. Overall, I like the direction the offensive line is going. I think that they're kind of – I wouldn't say piecemealing it together. I think more on the lines of adding depth to it and trying to shore it up. And as much as you don't like Willie Colon, I think bringing back Willie Colon as a depth guy and keeping him on this team, another veteran.
If you said starter, Brandon, I was going to start yelling.
No, not a starter. I think he's another guy that you look at, you know, with depth on the team, a guy who's been here for a little while now, who they keep bringing back on one-year deals. You know, I think a lot of the offensive linemen can learn from Willie Colon, not punching people in the face, but, you know, doing what they need to do in terms of, you know, getting better. So I think Willie is a good addition in terms of being here, being a presence in the locker room. And it's again, it's a low-risk, high-reward. There's no risk. You cut him tomorrow, and, you know, no one's going to even – I don't know if any fans are going to know he's even gone. So I look at the Jets' offensive line as a slight upgrade. I'm okay with paying David Harris the money.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The offensive line, I think, does need to improve. I think they need to spend a top three pick on an offensive lineman, because there's still a big question mark with Ibushi, and even James Carpenter has some injury problems. So I like to see them shore up that. Obviously, the Jets have to get a game breaker running back type.
I think your next move is going to be to get a running back, whether it be through the draft or, I mean, everybody was talking. It seemed like C.J. Spiller was, you know, just about destined for New York as soon as he became a free agent, and now he's playing for the New Orleans Saints. So I think the Jets' next move is going to be a running back. But, I mean, in terms of this free agency right now, the Jets have done so much. And, you know, in terms of improving this football team, I mean, I'm really, really excited for the direction that this team is going in. And I think the Jets have maybe, you know, it's still too early to say. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to praise anybody yet, because you don't win Super Bowls in March. So I'm not going to praise the GM or the coach yet, But let me tell you something. If you're going to get a grade for the offseason, right now they get an A++ with extra credit for bringing back Darrell Reeves.
Yes.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the show tonight. And remember, as always, the New York Jets talk never stops on Jet Nation Radio. Go on over to JetNation.com. The forums are exploding every single day with new members on it that are love to talk New York Jets football. Talk about Darrell Revis. What do you think the next move is for the Jets? Do you want Marcus Mariota? How do you think these moves will, you know, catapult the Jets next season? Do you think that they'll be a playoff team? Are you excited for your New York Jets coming into this season? Also, I want everybody to check out on JetNation.com, the New York Jets, and Jet Nation. We're all in support of Fireman Ed. The new campaign has been launched to bring Fireman Ed back to the MetLife Stadium on Sundays. I can, you know, attest to being there with Fireman Ed, and it's nothing like it's been since he's gone. Unfortunately, the situations that occurred had forced him to leave. So I want everybody to go on over to JetNation.com because Jet Nation supports bringing back Fireman Ed. Go sign that petition. Let's get Fireman Ed back in MetLife Stadium on Sundays. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, and we will see you next week. Thank you for tuning in to Jet Nation Radio. And remember, you can hear us live every Tuesday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time right here on Jet Nation Radio.